Do you need to ask your boss for help, but you don't trust this mofo? Girl, I've been there. But guess what? I got something for you. Head on over to TrillMBA.com and join our safe space. When you join our safe space this week, you'll get my 3-step surefire method to ask for help and not get dinged for it. In this PDF, you'll get the 3-step formula to ask for help and also a checklist of things that you can print out and take with you to work and use right there in front of your boss. It is an awesome tool, especially if you don't trust your boss. You know, you ask for help and then they try to say, well, she had to ask for help. I had to hold her hand. Haha, let's eliminate that and get you the help that you need. Again, TrillMBA.com, join our safe space, and you will be emailed your copy of the 3-step surefire method to ask for help and not get dinged. All right, y'all, let's start the show. Welcome to the Trill MBA Show. I'm your host, Felicia Ann Rose Anuha, the trillest MBA you will ever know. And I'm here to help you survive and thrive in corporate America by giving you the truth and being as real as only I can be. Happy Sunday, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Today, we are talking about my personal Achilles heel in corporate America. We are going to talk about sponsors. What they are, because a lot of people have that confused, why they are critical to your career success, and what you need to think about when working to gain sponsor relationships in your organization. And I'm so excited today, you guys, because I have a very, very special guest, Michelle Silverthorne. Michelle is the founder and CEO of Inclusion Nation, a diversity consulting firm based in Chicago. Hey, Chi-Town. Michelle founded Inclusion Nation on the belief that diversity and inclusion needs a new voice for a new generation. So true. A graduate of Princeton University and the University of Michigan Law School, Michelle spent 4 years practicing for 2 large law firms in New York and Chicago. She then transitioned into the legal education field, where she spent 6 years training thousands of attorneys in person and online about implicit bias, diversity and inclusion, and millennials in the workplace. She has written numerous articles on these topics, including a well-received op-ed for the Chicago Tribune on implicit bias. She is a TEDx speaker and the author of the forthcoming book, Your Organization is Not a Melting Pot: How to Recruit, Train, and Lead a Diverse Workforce. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking so forward to talking with us right now. I'm in Chicago, where it is freezing and arctic, and we're having our polar vortex, and there's snow outside. So I am looking forward to listening to your sunny voice and hopefully bringing some warmth into Chi-Town.
Yay! Yes, I'm wishing warmth to all my Chi-Town friends. So Michelle, I have to ask you, because so many people are working in this space and they are passionate about it. Mm-hmm. But with all of your accolades, like, you have a law degree from the University of Michigan. You went to Princeton.
Go Blue and Tigers.
Yes. Like, yeah. you have Michelle Obama pedigree over here. Like, what made you want to come into this space of diversity and inclusion?
Oh, man, I have so many. I mean, I could talk about this for hours, but it has a lot to do with why I'm here and why I'm here on the show. So I grew up in Jamaica. I grew up in the Caribbean. I lived in Jamaica until I was 17 years old. I lived in Jamaica. I lived in Trinidad and Tobago. And that's how I ended up at Princeton. I got a scholarship to go to Princeton. I stayed there, and I went to Michigan Law for law school. And so I've been practicing law for about 10 years now. First, I worked with 2 large companies, 2 large law firms in the legal industry. We call them big law firms. And then I spent the last 6 or so years working for the Illinois Supreme Court, teaching diversity and inclusion. And then last year, I started Inclusion Nation. We are a diversity consulting firm. We do workshops. We do coaching. We do consulting. We come in and we talk about What are the challenges that you're facing at your company, whether you being the HR professional, the senior executive, the C-suite professional, you being the diverse professional who's looking to really get ahead in the workplace? What are the different challenges that you're facing, and how can we create a solution customized to you? So that's what we do. And the reason I started Inclusion Nation is because what I saw as the lack of honesty around diversity and inclusion in a corporate workplace, and in any workplace, a corporate workplace, a nonprofit workplace, a government workplace. So when I say honesty, I mean it in two ways, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have so many initiatives. We have so many fundraisers and scholarships and programs in place, but anyone can tell you that the needle on D&I has not moved. We are making tiny steps. It feels like for every three steps we're taking forward, we're going to do like 10 steps back, right?
Right.
And then 2008 hit, 2009 hit, and the recession hit, and we saw who gets cut first. Mm-hmm. The people who get cut first are the ones who aren't locked into the workplace. The ones who get cut first are the ones who don't have the backing, the power, the name recognition, and quite honestly, the skin color and the gender to succeed. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happens when the reality hits and all these diverse initiatives that we put into place. We do them when the times are good, and then when the times get rough, we kind of throw them under the bus. And so that's the lack of honesty I'm talking about. And so when I think about my years of experience in corporate America, when I think about my years of experience in teaching D&I, what I've learned is that we need to be honest. We need to be honest about what's not working, and then we need to be honest about how we see each other, how we talk with each other, how we think about each other. And this is something I had a TED Talk a few months ago. And this is something that I really dive into in that talk, is that we need to recognize that we have our biases, and we need to recognize that we have our stereotypes. But then what we also need to do is to dive into those biases, to dive into those stereotypes, and that's how we're going to make change. And so when I do my work, my consulting, my coaching, my speaking, that's the message I send, which is why talking about sponsorship today is so important to me, because sponsorship is one of the crucial avenues that we are really going to need to use if we're going to get Black women into those positions of power in that workplace.
You just said a whole word. Hold on, I gotta take a, whew, did y'all heard that? If not, go back, replay. That was amazing. I love your passion, and again, I want to thank you for being here, because what I learned in my 10 years post MBA is that I was really, truly lacking sponsor relationships. Now, mind you, I've got coaches, I've got mentors, and a lot of times I thought those were sponsors. So I want you to say, what is Michelle's working definition of a sponsor?
So my working definition of a sponsor is someone who has power in your organization, whatever that organization is, who has leverage, and then who identifies you as a high performer and then champions you to succeed. And the you that I'm talking about is you as the professional, you as the person who wants to navigate into the high levels of your corporation, into your government agency, of your nonprofit, of your company. And that's what a sponsor does, that they put their reputation, their skill, their legacy on the line to really move you up and to navigate you into those positions in the workplace. That's what a sponsor means to me.
That sounds really scary when you put it like that somebody is going to put their professional reputation on the line for me, little old me. How do you tell people not to be afraid of that? Like,
right. I mean, it's hard. And I think, you know, I go back a lot when I talk about diversity, how it's all part of a bigger scheme, right? And the bigger system, a bigger universe. And when we have professionals, and when I talk about Black women, I'm also talking about Black women millennial professionals. So it's not just that we're Black. It's not just that we're women. It's also that we're Black women who are of a certain age,
right,
who are feeling that we're not being seen in the workplace, which makes sense, because this is a workplace that has long been designed to be successful for white men. They were the only ones who were allowed into the workplace.
Yep.
They excluded women. They excluded people of color for a long time in that workplace. And so how the workplace functions, how it operates, is it's designed to really promote how white men relate with each other, how they develop business with each other, how they get client relations with each other, how they socialize with each other. And that's the workplace that exists in pretty much every single occupational space in this country.
Yep.
And so once we recognize that, and it's just so hard, especially for the people who are in power, the I mean, there's only 30%, I think, right now of non-Hispanic Caucasian white men in this country, right? But they occupy about 90% of all the positions of power in corporate America.
Yes.
And so to have them understand that this is a system that they've built, which has been, especially in this country, tremendously successful, but it's a system that excludes a lot of people precisely because it was designed to exclude a lot of people, because it wasn't designed for a lot of people, different cultures, different genders, different sexual orientations. It just was not. And so when I say why it's important to have a sponsor, it's because of that exact reason, because we need to recognize that when we are entering the workplace, we're already starting 20 steps behind everyone else. We are already starting in a space where we are not the majority culture, where we're not the majority gender, where we're not the majority age for a lot of these spaces. And so what we need to do is to have someone stand up and say, I see you. I see that you're performing. I understand where you're going. And more importantly, here's how you're going to benefit me. Because, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, the thing with a sponsor and relationship, it's not just about, you mentioned Felicia earlier about mentoring, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about how are we going to be friends or how can I help your professional development? It's really, how are you going to help me, whether it's cementing my legacy, whether it's getting me access to new client networks, whether it's getting me access to new customer bases, whether it's getting me into spaces where I have not been before, whether it's because you bring in a different perspective or a different talent set that I don't currently have on my team, whatever it is, how are you going to promote me when I'm your sponsor? And then in return for that exchange of value that we're giving each other, how am I going to help you get into the spaces? So when I talk about what sponsors do, I want to make sure that people aren't scared of it, because you shouldn't be scared of something that's essentially a transactional relationship. It's not just the I'm taking and I'm taking and I'm taking from this usually older white male. You're also giving him something. You're giving him something that he needs to continue to succeed. And that's why he's depending on you and he's putting his reputation online for you, because it's that exchange of a relationship, that mutually beneficial relationship, that really makes sponsoring the right place to go in the workplace.
Wow. I didn't think about it like that. I think in the past, when I look for sponsors, I was looking for somebody who wanted to cultivate a relationship for me, but I don't think I understood that I needed to be the employee for them, where if they give me this stretch assignment,
right,
they had something on the line behind the scenes around mm-hmm. that assignment, that if I succeed, they look good, they succeeded. I mm-hmm. never thought about it. I have a mentor that tells me, Felicia, you got to play chess and not checkers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the difference between building a sponsor relationship or several sponsor relationships is the difference between playing chess and checkers. Like sometimes right. just having a mentor, that's playing checkers. But when you yeah. understand the value you bring to the table for that sponsor and you understand what they're needing from you, that's playing chess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I love that. I love that analogy, because it is a strategy. It is a long-term game that you're playing with a sponsor, and it matters because it's your career that's on the line. So for example, with a mentor, a lot of companies, particularly Fortune 100 companies, when I talk to a lot of my clients, they will all have mentorship programs, right? They're all going to have right. mentoring programs. When you start out, when, you know, whatever level you are, when you come into the company, you sometimes they'll either match you with someone, maybe they'll do mentoring circles. Maybe it's whatever small department or practice group that you're in that has a mentoring, but whatever it is, there's usually a mentoring program. But there's nothing that you lose out if you don't participate, right?
Right.
Like if this mentor doesn't work out with you, whatever, you go on to the next one. A mentor serves a crucial role because they're the ones who are going to show you, here are the assignments that you're going to take. Here's how you're going to develop professionally. I was a lawyer for a number of years, right? A mentor mm-hmm. is someone who's going to say, well, no, that deposition, those questions that you're asking, that's not really what you want to get at. How you're structuring this brief or how you're using this legal argument, that's not really going to get you what you need to do. Here's what you need to know about this judge that you're going to appear before, right? Those are the kinds of things that mentors do, and they're great at it, and it's necessary. But then at some point, you're going to realize something, and you should realize something at some point. You're going to realize that what you need is not someone who's just going to give you advice. What you need is someone who's going to push you up, who's going to say, this is where you want to go in your career. This is how you're going to get there, and this is what we are going to do for each other in return. And it's that kind of chess checker strategy that you just talked about, right? Mm-hmm. Because with a mentor, you can just play checkers all the time. You don't have to think about a long-term game. You can think about your immediate, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks out, right, with your mentor. But with a sponsor, you are only looking at the long game. You are only looking at where is the next level that you're going to go. So if mentoring doesn't work out, whatever, that's not a problem, right?
Right.
But if sponsoring doesn't work out, if that sponsor who put their credibility on the line, who made you their star, that doesn't work out, that's a lot more pressure. But what you win in the end is so much bigger than what you just won with mentoring.
Oh my God. And where were you 10 years ago? Okay.
I was learning this 10 years ago. I mean, like, you would talk about, you know, how our journeys are different. And that's just, you know, I talk to a lot of young professionals. And the number one thing I tell them, something I wish I'd known, is where is your career map? Where is your career journey? And who's going to help you get there? I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll talk about biases. We'll talk about stereotypes. But I will say, I went to predominantly white undergrad. I went to predominantly white law school. And they're both wonderful places. And I love them both. And I have great memories. But there are things in predominantly white spaces that they don't prepare you for as a professional of color.
Nope.
And there are things that they don't prepare you for as a woman in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that when you start out, because there's just so much overwhelming information and the world is coming at you. But again, when you think about these workplaces, you know, whatever it is, your advertising agency, your firm that you're working for, your financial services firm, whatever you're doing, think about, again, who built them? And who structured them and who's leading them? It's not people who look like you.
Right.
And that's when we enter those spaces, until we recognize that. And then we have a plan for how we're going to get into those spaces, how we're going to navigate those spaces. That's what takes us to the next level. But if you're like me 10 years ago when you started out, mm-hmm. and you're going in, you're just like, okay, I'm just going to keep my head on the ground. I'm going to keep my nose to the grindstone. Because that's how I see my white male peers doing. And that's how they're moving up. But let me tell you something about those white male peers. They're moving up because not only are they working hard and they're doing their work, they see themselves reflected in leadership. Mm-hmm. Leadership sees themselves reflected in them. And they can work hard, and then they'll also get invited to the golf course. And they'll also get invited out to drink. I remember this one senior executive I was talking with told me that when he knows that someone in his company is going to make it, like the person he is working with is really going to make it to the next level, into that C-suite, is when he invites him home for dinner with his wife, right? Wow. That's when he knows. And you know who gets invited for dinner homes with their wife? It's not people who look like us.
Right.
So that's why a sponsor matters, because it's those positions of power, those things that aren't in the employee handbook or the employee manual when you come in the first day, those are the things that we need to learn.
For a woman of color in these spaces, how do we get that invite? Mm-hmm. Like, what should we be, when we're looking in the organization, and we're looking at the political landscape of the organization, and we've done our brass tacks, right? Like, we are talent right. that is sponsorable. Like, we mm-hmm. work 10 times as hard to get half as far.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to understand when we're looking to create this relationship? Like, what empathy do we need to have for this other person?
I think it starts with understanding what your value proposition is. What are you, and I said this earlier, what are you bringing to the table as your professional network, as your professional skill set? What unique values are you adding? And then as you go and as you do your work, as you, you know, get identified as a top performer, as you get identified as someone with the skills and someone with the work and someone with the know-how, do you know the people who need to pay attention to you? Are you aware of them? Do you know where they work? Do you know what offices they're in? Do you know what email address they have? Like, can you get in touch with them? There's a really great study that talks about when you look at a picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, just when people are identifying a picture of different ethnicities and different characters, it is far harder for them to pick out who the Black woman in that picture are than it is for them to pick out who the white men in the picture are, or even the Asian woman in the picture. Black woman, that's the hardest level for them to pick out. We're the hardest people to identify. Who are we? Why are we unique? Why are we different? And yet, at the same time, you know what's really easy? It's really easy to point out when we failed.
Yes.
It's really easy to say, oh, well, she didn't make it, so she's not going to be good enough, right?
Right.
What I try to tell people is, you need to figure out what your skill sets are. You need to develop the skill sets that work for the workplace. So for example, if the thing that you need to do to succeed at the next level, look at those competencies, and I hope they exist in your company. If they don't, we need to talk to your HR people about developing competencies.
Right.
But look at those competencies, right? You need to build up your sales skills. You need to build out your marketing skills. You need to build out your technical development skills. Whatever those competencies are, get them done. Get those projects, get those assignments that can get those done, because you need to be noticed. It's really hard to be noticed. It's really be hard to be noticed as a superstar, because there are all those biases and all those stereotypes that keep on pushing back and saying, well, Black women aren't good enough. Black women aren't leadership material. They're not management material. They're not competent enough. Continually, the work that we have to do as Black women is to push against those stereotypes and keep doing the work that says that we are good enough, that we are here enough, that we are strong enough. But at the same time, become more visible. Go to those events that we're worried about not going to. Keep on playing the game. Keep on playing the game by the rules that they've invented to work for themselves, because we have to keep on showing up. Because it's when we stop showing up that they forget that we exist in the first place. And it's not easy. It's not easy to keep showing up. And that's why I say you need an advocate. You need someone in your field. It starts out with the mentors that you have. Then it goes to whoever coaches that you have. But then it has to move into the sponsor. Because those doors aren't just going to open for us automatically. We have to find someone willing to kick those doors down for us too.
Ooh, you better preach, Michelle.
I can always preach. I say, look, my job is, it's like, I go in there and I inspire you and I tell you how you have to do it, but you have the hard job, right? Like, you're the one who has to do it. I don't know anything about coding language, so I can tell you that you need to be the best darn coder that you can find, but I can't tell you how to do that.
Right.
I mean, I can tell you that you need to close those deals with those clients, but I can't tell you how to do that. I can tell you, though, that you need to figure out what is your natural skill set. Like, for example, if everyone else in your firm is taking out clients to, you know, lunch at the country club, but you know what your skill set is? You can make a really great paella, or you can do a really great spa day, or you can take someone to a fantastic hip hop concert. Those are the skills that you have that aren't different from what they might have. But if you can use those skills and you can show the same results, even better, if you can show better results, because like you said, we got to work twice as hard to get half as far. Mm-hmm. That's how you move forward. That's how you show them your unique value add. But you got to keep working at it. And it's not easy.
No, it is not easy. But in that not easy, what advice would you give to women? Because I know that I struggle being comfortable around, especially white males, senior leader white males in the workplace. They make me uncomfortable. And here's why. Because everybody puts this bug in your ear that this person's opinion of you in the organization is so important. And so any little thing you do could be misconceived or misconstrued. And then literally you could have this crash and burn moment. And so I started to operate out of fear. And so I would shy away from cultivating those relationships, because it's not like these white men are like extra friendly to you. Like I have literally been in spaces where there's, you know, a hallway. And so the senior leader, and he knows you because you're in his department, but he doesn't know you. But let's say, you know, in front of you are walking, you know, a white girl, a white male, maybe a brown person, Indian, Hispanic, you know, non-Black person. And then here comes you, one of the few in your department. And what I've seen is the white man leader will stop and talk to the young white male who's your counterpart. And then you're coming up, they stop talking. The white male leader will pass by you, not even acknowledge your presence, won't say a word to you. And I've been told that it's twofold. So I don't say anything to that person because every interaction with that person could be a landmine. So if you don't say anything, you can't get dinged for saying anything. But then also I've been told that the senior leaders won't necessarily come talk to you because they don't want you to be afraid of, I think because they, I've been told it, the senior leaders understand this dynamic too. And so it's like, how do I get comfortable in breaking that fear-based reaction to senior leaders?
Oh, it's hard. You know, I this is something I talk about a lot when I do my talks on bias, right? The average white American has 91 white friends and one Black friend. They don't know how to talk to you because they don't know how to talk to you. That's the challenge. It's a challenge for all of us. It's a challenge because interracial relationships, interracial friendships, and as someone who is in an interracial marriage, it's on the rise, but it's slow. And if you go home, and if you're, say, a white senior executive at a Fortune 20 company, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say Fortune 50 company. And you go home to your white suburb, and your kids attend all white schools, and you are on the train with all of your fellow white professionals, and then you go into work, and everyone who's at your leadership level is white. When are you ever going to make those peer-to-peer relationships that you have with people of color? When are you ever? You're never going to do it. And that's where the challenge comes into the workplace, because if the whole space around us is only monochrome, then we're never really going to get to that point where we are comfortable doing that and stepping out of our comfort zone and making that those relationships and those connections. And then for someone like you, who is the junior person, there is the problem of power. If you're going to ask the senior manager, let's have a conversation, the effort and the strength it takes on your part to be able to do that is hard, because right. they are in a far more powerful position than you are. Right. So the advice that I give, it starts with the work. You have to be on one of their assignments. I mean, I worked on the same hallway for a number of years with a lot of older white men. And I can guarantee you that the first time they ever actually saw me, and that seeing is so powerful, is when I started to work for them and I was stellar at it. Now, let's say you never actually work with them. Go ask them for coffee. Like, just start with that. Stop by their office. Talk about something that you may have in common. You have to step past that complete discomfort that we have in making ourselves not seen. Because it's so easy for a Black woman to go into the workplace and keep her head down and make sure she doesn't stand out, because she knows what happens when she stands out. She gets criticized. Right. She gets condemned. She does not get taken into those same spaces as white men do. And so we need to change the narrative a bit. If the issue is changing it on your end, which actually, let me just say that I really think the narrative needs to be changed on their end, because they're the ones with the power.
Right.
But let's say that I'm trying to give advice to you as a young Black professional in this workplace, mm-hmm. and you are trying to change the narrative. It starts with the work that you do for them. Do work for them, because that's what they see you do. When they start seeing you doing work for them, that's how they're going to keep on promoting you and recognizing you and saying hi to you at the company dinners and seeing you at the retreat and talking to you. And then if you don't even want to start by asking them out for coffee, just stop by their office. See how else you can help them. There are so many gaps in knowledge that we have. Like, people who are young always underestimate what kind of talent they have. I mean, there's a really, I could talk all day about imposter syndrome. And I also could talk all day about stereotype threat, which is the way that you recognize the stereotypes in the workplace affect your confidence levels and your ability to perform. Mm-hmm. But you do have skills. You do have unique skills. And if you see it as a case of, I'm going to start talking to someone so they can understand what skills I have and what I can bring to them and how I can benefit them, that's how you start the conversation. Third, it helps to have someone go in with you, right?
Right.
It is a lot less intimidating to have a friend. So there's two of you going in and saying hi. There's two of you asking for coffee. There's two of you saying, can I pick you up something from the coffee machine or something? But you start with those conversations. You have them see you. Have them see you as not just, you know, another one of the nameless faces that they can't recognize, but as a person and as an individual. And it's those tiny social interactions, and quite frankly, those social interactions that we are strongly missing right now in the workplace. Mm-hmm. We're all sitting behind screens and we're all staring into smartphones. Young people, older people, white, Black, everyone alike, we're doing the same thing. We're not creating those personal interactions. That's what we really need to move ahead. Start with those social interactions. Now, the larger problem of the inequality in our workplaces and the bias in our workplaces and the structured bias in our workplaces, that's something that needs to be handled. That's something that needs to be handled at the leadership level. That's something that needs to be handled at the recruiting level, the training level, the development level. Right. But if we're just talking about those, starting those interpersonal relationships with, do they even know my name? Are they even comfortable seeing my face? Will they just walk past me without saying a word? That stuff, that starts with conversation. If they're not the ones who are going to start it, then it's going to have to be on you.
Right. And you know what I've found? 9 times out of 10, no matter how uncomfortable you are or how uncomfortable the senior leader is, if you just acknowledge their presence as a human mm-hmm. being, because senior leaders, you have to understand, they're a bit disconnected from the day to day. And deep mm-hmm. down, they actually do want to talk to you. They want to mm-hmm. yep. get into your brain. They want to know, like, so what's really happening down there that I can't see?
Yeah.
And if,
again, it's what you bring, right? Those exactly. goals, that's the value that you add.
Exactly. So you have to, and I'm talking to myself, but y'all mm-hmm. too out there. You have
we
to
see you, y'all.
Yes. We have to stop being afraid of just talking to these people, thinking that if I say the wrong thing, I could cause myself a lot of heartache. And I know, especially in very hierarchical organizations, you know, if you're meeting with the CEO, you got to tell your boss and your boss's boss and your boss's boss's boss, according on where you are in the organization. And they want you to go in there buttoned up and they want you to be this and be that. But I think what I've seen where Black women have started to be successful is, for example, I have a friend, she would just pop in to the CMO's office and say, hey, how you doing? I hope you're having a good day. You know, I really loved the last offsite we had and I learned this and I didn't know that. And so thank you for, you know, sponsoring that offsite. And then she opened the door for a conversation. And but it was genuine. Like, she was really excited about what she had learned. And she saw the, it was actually the CMO sitting in her office. And so she just popped in and was like, hey, I love that you gave that speech and blah, blah, blah. And she didn't, she wasn't worried about what will the CMO think about me? What will my boss say? You know, she didn't worry about any of that stuff. She was just genuinely excited and grateful. And she wanted to share that. And she saw the CMO as a human being.
Right. It's hard for a lot of people, not just because of our race and not just because of our gender, but because of our personality types, right?
Right.
I am the personality type that will easily pop into someone's office and start talking with them. It's easy for me. I mean, it's why I do this job for a living, because I can do it. I'm happy to do it. If you're the kind of personality type that just needs prep, that's more of a I need an agenda before I walk out the door kind of person, then make yourself an agenda. Don't think that you aren't good enough to meet with any of these people, because you are good enough to meet with all of them.
Amen.
Don't think that you aren't going to do this because if I do this, then X, Y, Z will happen. And all of those negative thoughts that will roll into our heads because we have lived in a country since its foundation is based on the stereotype that we are not as good enough, as good as they are.
Amen.
And because we have lived with that stereotype our entire life, that makes us think that when we go into those offices and there are those older white men there and they're sitting in their offices, we aren't good enough to talk to them, or we are going to be judged because of what we say or how we look or how we stand, you know, how we even walk in. Or worst case, they're going to look up and they're just going to dismiss us outright.
Right.
And for many of us, that's actually happened to us. Just like you said, we have been dismissed outright. Let's take our space. Let's fill up our space. We take up space, right? We are not invisible in the workplace. Now, I say all of this, but again, I cannot emphasize enough. This is not a fight, a battle that we should be fighting on our own, right? We need to recognize, and our workplaces need to recognize, the cultures that they create are cultures that continually reinforce the white male standard. And they don't necessarily allow for the other standards to flourish, whether it's the standards of how do I engage with clients, or how do I communicate, or how do I dress. Those kinds of standards of authenticity, our workplaces don't necessarily do that. And so it's also on them to make those changes, and it's on us to make our changes. And together, as we make those changes, that's how we move the workplace forward.
Can somebody just give you a megaphone and put you on television? Oh my God, thank you so much. It's so true. It's a two-way street. And, you know, my podcast, the reason why I do this is because I want to give people the courage and the confidence to do their part as Black women. But I also want to help them recognize when their organization is not doing their part, and then tactically how they should shift and move and how they should manage their career. Because it's not on the organization to promote you. It's not on the organization to give you a sponsor. It's not on the organization to manage your career. That's on you. But understand, it is on the organization to give you good, fertile soil to plant yourself.
Exactly. When I talk to my various companies, I do my workshops, one of the things that I talk about is the different levels of D&I and how far we've come in. So you can always start with the business case for D&I, and everyone knows the business case for D&I. You talk about sales revenue, you talk about the demographics and how they're changing this country, you talk about clients, you talk about globalism, you talk about all that stuff. But yet, you have to recognize that our companies are making so much money by precisely not doing that stuff.
Right.
And instead, doing exactly what they've been doing for years, not seeing us. So then you can't just say it's about the money, it's about the business, it's about the clients. That may make some people change. Maybe the larger companies who have to report to shareholders, maybe they'll change. But again, when the rubber hits the road, is everyone going to change because of that? Probably not. Because for a lot of companies, for a lot of firms, for a lot of businesses, diversity doesn't make them as much money as we think it should. Now, I will tell you about the changing demographics because I think it's hugely important. Mm-hmm. I think it's hugely important that 56% of the people in this country who are under the age of 18 are people of color. And I think that is transformative for the country. And I think that's going to be transformative for this nation and the business place. You don't want to listen to that? That's fine. Let's talk about the next thing. Let's talk about innovation. Let's talk about the robots. Let's talk about the algorithms. Let's talk about who's replacing our jobs, who's taking over our jobs, who can do our jobs more efficiently. Let's talk about design thinking. Let's talk about teams that are more innovative, that are more strategic. Diverse teams are the ones who can bring in those ideas, who can reach out to those communities. Because what you need to thrive in this country right now, if you're a company, you need that innovative thinking. You need that strategic thinking. You need that outside-the-box thinking. And you're going to get that thinking from the diverse professionals who are in your workplace, not the ones who are heading out the door. And then, if that's even not enough to you, and then I talk about race. I talk about what it's like to be a Black woman in America, how we struggle, because then at that point, they can see it from their eyes and from their perspective, the perspective that they haven't seen a lot of. Because again, they are going back into their neighborhoods and into their suburbs and into their cars and into their worlds that aren't diverse and that aren't integrated. So again, it's all the different levels that we really need to change it. We can't just attack it, diversity and inclusion, from one perspective and say, this is it. We just make the business case, people are going to change. Or we just talk about implicit bias, people are going to change. Or we just talk about sponsorship, people are going to change. Or we just put it on everyone else to make the change, whether that everyone else is the people in HR or the people in talent development or the people who are in the C-suite. Or we put it on us to make the change. We all have to work together. And so you need to figure out, when you're trying to develop your career, and if you're working in a company of 20 people or in a company of 200,000 people, where is my path to success? Where do I want to see myself in 3 or 5 or 7 or 10 years? Where are the people who are going to help me get there? When you start out your sponsorship journey, you need to ask yourself those questions. And once you know the answers to those questions, and once you get your mentors in place, then you start looking at, I am great at the job I do. I am great at the work I do. I believe in myself and I know I can get to that next level. And that's when the sponsorship steps in.
So Michelle, let me ask you this, because that is great tactical information. So let's say you're busting your butt. You have a few mentors. You're trying to make it happen. But the political climate, it's not necessarily against you. It's just, you're not getting the traction. How would you advise women to either, if they're going to stay, what should they try to do to pivot? Or if they're starting to look for their next opportunity, like what should they be thinking about?
So going back to, you know, if you have a sponsor, right, but it's not working out, the politics aren't working. What I tell the people who I coach is simple. Like, your mental health matters more than anything.
Amen.
This is our one shot, right? This is it. Like, this career, this workplace that you're in isn't the only workplace in this entire country. And it's certainly not the only workplace in this entire world. If you have done what you can, it's toxic and it's not helpful to you and it's dragging you down and you're just psychologically not ready to stay. Some of the most successful people in this world have left companies. They've been fired from companies, they've been laid off, or they've just walked out the door and they've become successes elsewhere. There is a place for you and it may not be there. Now, if the place for you is there and you just need to keep navigating that, then by all means, keep doing it. You need to cultivate your allies. Say you have one sponsor. You should never have one sponsor. You should think of a sponsor, and I read this somewhere, it was a really great quote. Think of a sponsor like an investment portfolio. You have to hedge your bets. So have multiple sponsors. Mm-hmm. Have different sponsors for different aspects of what you are able to do. And also remember with sponsors, if you don't necessarily have to like them, they don't necessarily have to be role models to you. You may not even want to be like them, right? You may not want to make the sacrifices that they made to get to where they were. Right. How they approach work may not be the way that you approach work, but what you're using them for and what they're using you for is to get ahead. That's why you have your sponsors, and that's why you pull out as many sponsors as you want, because this isn't like a personal, oh, you're going to make me feel bad if I do this kind of relationship. This is a transactional relationship. So think of it as an investment portfolio. You have your sponsors, right? But you also have the other allies that you cultivated. If you've gotten to a position of a more senior position in the firm or in the organization that you're with, then think about who else is behind you. Who have you supported? Who are the people who can speak up on your behalf? Who are the people who are also in those meetings who can talk about this? Because then you are going to get to that position where in whatever sphere of influence you have, that you have the power to change it. But I'm going to be honest about how corporate America works. There are always politics. There are always going to be politics. There are always going to be pushback. That said, there are places where your values as a human being, as a person, as a professional might be better reflected somewhere else than the space you're in right now. And that's something your sponsor can help you understand. Every single workshop I do, every single lecture I give, every single talk I give, I always end with authenticity, because I don't think any of us is ever going to survive in the workplace if we continue having to wear a mask when we come into work, if we continue having to compromise what our values are and what we believe. Now, I am not saying that everyone with every value in every single system in the world needs to come in and we can like wear our cutoff jeans and our flip-flops and, you know, wear straw hats. That's not what I'm saying when I say authenticity.
Right.
What I'm saying is, what is most important to you? In your value system, what are the core values that you have? And when you go into work, are you having to compromise those values? Or when you go into work, are you really seeing a space where those values can shine? Are you seeing a space where you can shine because of that? And that's so important, because if you can hold on to that, that helps your mental space at work. That helps your psychological safety at work. That's what you need to survive, and that's what you need to thrive. And so that's the kind of support I will give to you. So if you're struggling, and if you're trying to navigate the politics, and if you have your people in place, and if you know what your talent is, and if you know what your unique value add to this company is, you know, however large or small your department is, then you can navigate that. I believe that you can. I know that you can. But you don't have to, because there might be other places out there where you are better suited to work at, where you're better suited to fit into. So don't lock yourself into a toxic situation just because you think you have to, but don't leave a situation just because you think they're ready to kick you out. Fight for your space and then leave when you realize that your mental headspace can't take it anymore.
Woo, Michelle, I want to thank you for just being a voice in this space. I want to thank you for being a truth sayer in this space. Because I think a lot of us walk into the office and we're like, okay, am I crazy? Is it me? No, it's not you. You're not crazy. This is happening. This is what's happening. And I love how you've laid out the why behind it. So I really appreciate that. One last question for you. If you could go back right when you were coming out of law school, what advice, what's one key nugget you would give to yourself about managing your career?
Oh, there's so many. I would tell myself that that first job that you're getting is not going to be the job that you're leaving with at the end of the day. Whether it's the position's going to change or the company's going to change or your actual, you know, role in life is going to change, whatever it is, the person that you're walking in that door on your first day is going to evolve, and she's going to change, and she's going to be better, and she's going to know more. So what I would tell her when she walks in that door is to be open, to look outside that world and see, this is the space I'm in right now. How am I going to succeed here? How am I going to move up in my space here? Who am I going to talk to so I can succeed here? How am I going to be an expert here? Because we have to visualize our success, especially for a lot of young Black women who are working in spaces where they don't see people who look like them at the top, where they don't see a space for them at the top. It is so important to visualize what success looks like. I grew up in the Caribbean. I didn't grow up in the States. I grew up in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And in the Caribbean, when I grew up in Jamaica. There are thousands, hundreds of thousands, almost 2 million people who look like me, mm-hmm. who are successful Black people on our ads, in our stores, in our schools, in our companies. And so I wish I could give every single young Black professional that feeling of knowing that when I enter a space, I can be a success. That's what I want to tell myself if I was going back, you know, gosh, let's say 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That when I walked in the door, I can be successful at this. I can star at this. I can soar at this. And that's what we need to do, because all this is hard work and it's long and the rewards are infrequent. But we can do this. You can do this. You can be a success. That's what I would tell myself.
Amen. And we need people to do this. We need people to stay the course, because we need representation so that another 10, 20 years from now, there's somebody who is born right here in the States, but they have that experience of seeing themselves reflected in leadership positions and in different visualizations of success. And we need people to stay the course. That's why I do this podcast, because I want people to be encouraged every week to stay the course. Not all of us can leave and start our own companies. Somebody's got to stay and be the warrior.
And it's, again, it's there's a lot of headwinds against this, right? There's a lot of headwinds against this, you know, but you are, this, we're recording this the day after the SAG Awards. So I'm going to quote Nina Simone and Chadwick Boseman. You are young, Black, and gifted, and you can do it.
Amen.
And we are here to support you do it. And you have a family of fellow professionals who want to see you succeed. Lean into that. Lean into that. Lean into that support group. Don't, you're not on your own, and you're not alone in doing this. You can do this with help, and you can do this.
Amen. Michelle, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate you for just laying all the nuggets out there on sponsorship and how we should navigate this particular aspect of our careers. Now, I need you to tell my listeners how they can connect with you.
Yes, I would love to hear from you. You can find me on literally any single social media platform that you can find. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn. You can email me at michelle@inclusionnation.org. Please visit my website. And you can find me on YouTube. You can find my TED Talk on YouTube, where I talk about why is it that white people in America find it so hard to talk about race? And what can we do to change that? And then if you are working for a company or an organization that really wants to have these kinds of conversations, that wants to have this training, to have this coaching, to have this consulting, get in touch with me. You can call me, you can email me, read about the workshops that I do, email me to find out what it is I can do for your company, because I truly believe in this mission. And I truly believe that we can transform this nation. We all can do it. We work together. We have honest conversations about belonging, about authenticity, and about really moving beyond those biases, moving beyond those stereotypes to create a truly inclusive workspace. So I look forward to hearing from you.
Amen. And everybody, I will, Michelle, I will put all of your social media handles, your website, and the link to the TEDx will be at trillmba.com under this episode post. And as always, you guys, if you need someone to help or advise you about a specific situation at work, go to trillmba.com/coaching, and you can schedule a free 30-minute consultation with me where I'll help you strategize through whatever that specific situation you're trying to work through. So say you're trying to figure out how to have that initial conversation with a sponsor. We can talk through it. I'm always happy to help. If you don't have time to get on the phone with me, you can always email me at ask@trillmba.com. I'm happy to either answer your question or connect you to people like Michelle that are experts in these areas that I may not have the exact expertise. So email me, go to the website, connect with us. And Michelle, thank you so much again. I so appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. You are great.
You are a champion. And I just hope that, you know, your mission, which is mission critical, continues to just soar through this universe and really create real change that we need to succeed as a society.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks. So until next time, you guys, keep it true. The Trill MBA Show is a Fair World Corp. LLC production Executive produced by Felicia and Rose Anuha. Music is Kick Push by Ryan Little. Keep it trill every day, y'all.